Dave Douglas, an administrator of a Christian school, told the story about the day there was a knock, he said, at my office door. Upon opening the door, I was met by one of our lady teachers and a 17-year-old male student, whom I will call Juan. The very firm voice of the lady teacher exclaimed, "Sir, this young man refuses to do any work in my class and is totally defiant toward me." The hardened look on Juan's face was evident. He was definitely a defiant student. I excused the teacher, told her I would take care of the problem. Juan was not a newcomer to my office. As a matter of fact, there were other lady teachers who had similar problems with him. He was really at the end of his rope. He knew it. I knew it. His anger and defiance was always directed toward lady teachers. Our male teachers never had a problem with him. I made a phone call to our Spanish pastor at the church. I knew that he had been working with Juan as well, and within an hour the Spanish pastor was in my office. Juan had a choice to make: immediately change his behavior or return to the public school system. For 25 minutes, the Spanish pastor counseled with him. As he spoke with Juan, I listened, and it became very clear to me as they talked what his problem really was. When the Spanish pastor had finished speaking to Juan, there was a moment of silence, and then I asked Juan a key question in a very calm, deliberate voice. In Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, Jesus delivered what was probably the greatest sermon of all of history to a crowd of people on a mountainside. Let me give you the background of that great Sermon on the Mount. In the century before the birth of Christ, the nation of Israel had fallen under the heavy iron boot of the dominating control of the Roman Empire. Because of the cruelty of the Roman government, deep hatred had developed in the hearts of many Jews toward their oppressors. In order to justify their wrong responses to the Romans, the true meaning and interpretation of the Old Testament law had been twisted and perverted. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus explains the true meaning of God's holy, perfect Old Testament law. And it's very significant that Jesus began with one of the most, when he's explaining the law, he began with one of the most vexing problems that men have ever faced: the problem of anger. Notice in chapter 5, verse 17, Jesus said, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Verse 20, "For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees," they're the ones been teaching the law, "ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar..." Now, sometimes we separate verses 21, 22, and then we separate out 23 and 24. But notice that they fit together. Whenever you see a therefore, you say, what is it there for? What went before it? And the discussion about anger goes before verses 23 and 24. Notice, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath ought against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar. And go thy way, first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." I want to explain to you what anger is and does, and tell you how to be delivered from anger. Anger is not what many people think it is. And God says that anger does things that many people don't realize. Would you notice, first of all, this morning, that anger deceives. Anger is deceptive. All sins carry within themselves the seeds of deceitfulness. But this especially seems to be true of anger. The deceptiveness of anger is that the angry person, get this, feels justified about being angry. He feels like he has a cause for his anger. Sometimes they'll even say it. Yes, I have a right to be angry. The people of Jesus' day recognized and acknowledged that killing was wrong. Verse 21, you've heard it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill. Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But Jesus took them further and pointed out that their anger was wrong as well. If you were to read further in verses 27 to 30, Jesus pointed out that not just adultery was wrong, but that lust was wrong as well. It is lust that leads to adultery. And Jesus said that a man should take radical actions to deal with not just adultery, but with lust. But just like lust leads to adultery, anger leads to murder. Anger really does lead to murder, doesn't it? A wife married to an angry man for 12 years said, finally the true monster came out. He threatened to kill me, saying, I'll get you when you're sleeping. He said he would hurt my friends. He broke into my home when I was alone and attacked me. I'm holding a series of newspaper articles here. Here is one titled, Father 17 Faces Charges for Beating Twin Daughters. Here's one entitled, Mad Driver's Disease. In August 1995, a 20-year-old man, enraged after a fender bender with a 33-year-old woman, pulled her out of her car and forced her to jump from a bridge into the Detroit River where she drowned. He was sentenced to 16 to 40 years in prison. Here's another one. You've all heard most, if not all, of these articles. In Goshen, Indiana, an angry employee was discharged by his department manager. He told fellow employees that he was going to return with a gun and kill the one who fired him. They called the police, but the police said there was nothing they could do because the crime had not yet been committed. 4 hours later, this irate employee returned with a gun, killed his manager, then shot and wounded other employees. And in recent weeks, we've all heard the story of the angry beatings that resulted in death in Chicago. And the article was titled, Coroner Called Powder Keg. Chicago police seek public's help in beating deaths. Anthony Stuckey, 49, and Jack Moore, 62, both of Chicago were in a rental van Tuesday evening that careened over a curb and plowed into people gathered on a stoop, police said. As the injured lay on the ground, an angry mob pulled the two men from the van and beat them to death with their hands, feet, bricks, and stone, police said. Anger leads to murder. And it's not just the murder that is sin. The anger is sin as well. The angry person, Jesus said, calls his brother Reka. It means empty-headed one. You might even call him or say to him, you stupid fool. People in the world will use a string of words that I won't say publicly. But Christians will often say other things like, you idiot. How stupid can you get? You dummy, don't you know any better? Here's what you've done. Listen. You have really done exactly what Jesus said when he said you call somebody Reka or fool. It's exactly the same thing. In your heart, you have done away with this person. In your spirit, you either temporarily or permanently murder that person. You're saying, I don't need you in my life, you idiot. Get out of my life. Anger almost always communicates rejection. No wonder somebody said, speak when you're angry and you'll make the best speech you'll ever regret. How could we possibly think that anger like this could be justified? Because there are times when anger seems to be the only thing that will work to fix whatever it is we see that is broken. I've got a newspaper article here entitled, Pitcher's Outburst May Have Stopped the Baseball Team Cardinals' Decline. It tells how the baseball pitcher, getting angry at his team's 7-game losing streak, seems to have had a positive effect on his team that led to victory in their next game. Oh, it's like, we needed that anger. Yeah, give us some more of that stuff. That's the deceptiveness of anger. Anger sometimes seems to work. But it wasn't really anger that was needed. What was needed was some determination and intensity. Intensity is wonderful, but we must be careful to not cross the line and let intensity become indignation. It's all right to be high-spirited. It's not right to be harsh. It's all right to be judicious. It's not right to be judgmental. It's all right to be emphatic. It's not all right to be enraged. It's all right to be watchful. It's not all right to be wrathful. It's all right to be determined. It's not all right to be destructive. One man's cause for his anger was this. Well, keeps the family in line. Here's what he said. I know it's not a good way to raise kids, but it works. When I get mad, they quiet down, do what I tell them. And you know that might actually work for a while, but it's too direct a violation of Ephesians 4:31 to produce good fruit long range. That verse says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger be put away from you. An angry man creates rebellion and discouragement in his wife, in his children, or in his workers that may eventually turn into bitterness. Anger cuts the heartstrings tied between a parent and a child and makes children vulnerable to negative peer influences and worldly pressures. Someone has wisely said this, the greatest quality a husband and father can demonstrate is genuine love, and the most destructive attitude that a father can have is anger. A father's anger is the strongest force imaginable to destroy the fellowship with his wife and drive his children away from him. A man only has to get angry once a month to keep his family in fear 24 hours a day all week long because they're always afraid he will blow up. The angry person feels that he has a cause. The angry person reads Matthew 5:22. I say unto you, whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of, and so on. And the angry person reads that and says, but I have a cause. Might be interesting for you to trace that phrase, without a cause, throughout the Bible. It actually occurs 8 times in the Bible, 6 in the Old Testament and 2 in the New Testament. The first time it occurs in 1 Samuel 19:5, Jonathan said to his father, King Saul, wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? Then 5 times in Psalms, David said that his enemies hated him without a cause. In John 15:25, Jesus said, they hated me without a cause. Did you notice the meaning of the phrase, without a cause? In all 8 cases where it occurs in the Bible, it means there is no cause. There is no cause for anger. There is no justification. Father, there is no justifiable cause for your anger. Mother, there is no justifiable cause for your anger. Husband, wife, there is no justifiable cause for your anger. Son, daughter, there is no justifiable cause for your anger. You can't defend it. Employer, employee, you cannot righteously, biblically defend anger. Psalm 37:8 says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. James 1:20 says, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. I was in Oak Harbor, Washington some months ago. I'd preached 4 days and given 6 key messages. And the last night, we decided to have a question and answer session. And a man stood up and looked at me and said this, Pastor Davis, I work hard all day. I come home tired. I find the kids haven't done their jobs. I tell them and they just sit there. When I raise my voice and get angry, they start to move. How do I get them to obey without getting angry? Now, I'll tell you later what I said to him, but would you notice right there that that man felt like there was some justification for his anger? He's saying, there's a cause for this. It's the only thing that works. I've talked to other people who continually display angry or an angry spirit, but they just deny it. I know there are critics out there who will attack you anytime they get a chance and criticize even when there's nothing to criticize. I'm aware of that. But listen, if you wisely humble yourself to talk to one or more stable, godly Christians, and they lovingly share with you that you have a problem with anger and angry spirit, then denial is very, very foolish on your part. You can deny the most intense anger or wrath anywhere around if you choose to. I read about a man who would pound his fist on the table, turn red, and scream, "I'm not mad! I'm not mad! I'm not mad!" He was mad. The problem with denial of anger, or even justification, is that it renders you then helplessly a slave in bondage to your sin. Then your sin not only leaves you in bondage, but also affects all those around you as well. Those in your outer circles of acquaintance will probably see your problem, just love you anyway. Those in your inner circle of acquaintance may also love you and may love you deeply and intensely, but are probably going to be damaged by you. Let me illustrate something that I thought of in relation to that. I've seen people who got cancer and died because of being around someone else's cigarette smoke. The secondhand smoke, for some reason, was more deadly to the person close to the smoker than to the smoker himself. And you know, I've also seen people who survived anger of their own. I didn't say it didn't affect them. I said they survived it, but those around them did not. I would submit to you that the number one thing killing spiritually children in Bible-believing homes and churches is the anger of one or both parents. Anger also destroys the spirit of oneness between a husband and wife. And I can't imagine anything more important than that for a husband and wife. Parents think that their wrath is justified by their child's disobedience or rebellion. The truth is, in most cases, the disobedience and rebellion is caused by the anger and escalates the anger until the parent's anger and the child's rebellion are having a feeding frenzy of intensity back and forth, encouraging and building and encouraging and building. In Proverbs chapter 22, verse 24, it says this, "Make no friendship with an angry man." It means don't be real close to an angry person. Don't pasture with him, graze with him, or feed with him. "And with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul." Lest that the word ways there means path or road. What happens if you're continually spending lots of time with an angry person? You'll become like him. You will start walking on the same road that he is walking on. I began with a story about a young man who was so angry at the lady teachers. And when this man sat and listened for a while, finally he looked at one and asked a key question in a very calm, deliberate voice, he said, "Juan, could I ask you, when you were young, did your father beat your mother?" And Juan quickly, he said, turned to him with a startled expression, put his hands over his face, and burst into tears. What happened to that boy? 17-year-old young man. He walked the same path with an angry father until he became like him. The hostility and anger his father displayed toward his mother had become a part of him. He was now treating women like his father had treated his mother. For many years now, we've been counseling parents with rebellious teens. I've seen teens who it seemed would have rebelled no matter who had been their parents. But I have to tell you, those are the rare cases. And young people, listen to me. While I'm here, let me say that when you stand before God, God isn't going to ask you if you had a good excuse for your problems. Young people, when you stand before God, God's not going to ask you if you had a good excuse for your rebellion, your disobedience, your bitterness, your bad attitude, your anger, whatever. There have been many young people who came from homes where one or both parents were lost and or angry and or immoral type people. And yet those young people became humble, kind, godly, meek, character, mature Christians. In other words, you have no excuse before God. But parents, you and I have a responsibility before God to not use anger with our mates or our children. Seldom have I seen angry parents with rebellious youth who turned around their children unless and until the parents made it a bigger goal to conquer their own anger than to conquer the child's disobedience. Usually what happens is they just keep focusing on the child's disobedience and they continue with the angry words and the angry spirit, and the child, even if the child wants to turn around, it's like, I can't turn around. I might want to and I can't. Did you notice what Jesus said in Matthew 5:23? If thou bring thy gift to the altar and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee. You come to offer your gift, whatever it is. And then you remember, maybe it's service, maybe it's time, maybe it's money, maybe it's prayer, whatever it is. You come to offer that gift to God. And you remember your brother has something against you because of your anger. That's the context. Leave your gift at the altar. Confess your sin of anger. Go to your brother. Confess to him. Then come and offer your gift. Jesus says He wants you to deal with your anger before you bring acceptable gifts to Him. Matthew 12:7 ties in here. Jesus said, I will have mercy and not sacrifice. No matter what a husband, wife, son, or daughter does to us, we're supposed to have a Christ-like, merciful response. A few days ago, Brother Kenny Graham and his family were here from Arkansas. I love the man of God that he is and the spirit that he has. And we went out to eat after one of the services. And we sat down in a restaurant. All the ladies were over here fellowshipping, and all the men were over here fellowshipping. And I watched Brother Graham correct his son, Blaine, 12 years of age. Here's what Blaine was doing. He was sitting there with this cup, this fast food restaurant, this cup, and it had a lid on it, and the straw, he was moving the straw up and down, and it was rubbing against the inside of the lid of the cup and making an irritating sound. I hadn't even noticed it, really. It didn't really bother me. But can you think, if it did bother you, how many parents would have said something like this? I've heard this kind of thing so many times. Blaine, would you stop that? You are driving me crazy. What is the matter with you anyway? Now, can I tell you, that is not correction at all. That is an attack on a child's character. You know what I saw? I saw correction that the boy never even knew was correction. I watched Brother Graham lean over and gently touch his son on the shoulder and say with a smile, Son, would you mind not moving your straw up and down like that? It affects me for some reason, like somebody scraping their fingers across a chalkboard affects some people. Now, I don't know why it does that, son, but I would appreciate it if you'd stop. And the boy said, Sure, Dad. Sorry about that. Oh, it's not you, son. It's just me. Do you see the difference? Do you hear the Spirit? Do you see the mercy? And do you know what good parenting really is? Good parenting can be described in three words. Write these down. Meditate on them over and over. Good parenting is calm, attentive, firmness. Those three got to be balanced. Calm, attentive, firmness. And what I just described to you and what I saw at that restaurant that night is probably the reason why every one of Brother Graham's children, what has he got? 8, I believe. All of them love God and love their parents, and it's just a wonderful spirit. Now, this brings me to a key statement that summarizes this first point of the message. Get this, would you? Your anger isn't caused by what is happening outside of you. Your anger is caused by what is happening inside of you. Listen to it again. It's a very important statement. Your anger is not caused by what is happening outside of you. It's caused by what is happening inside of you. Anger deceives concerning its justification, concerning its presence. And then anger is described in the Bible in some unusual ways. Do you know God uses at least, I think there's many more than this, but I found at least 5 different illustrations God uses to describe anger in the Bible. The first one I'd point out to you is found in Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28. And that is, anger is described as a city without walls. Listen to this. He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Anger doesn't just destroy you. It primarily makes you weak and vulnerable so that you and those under you, under your authority, can be destroyed. Think of the Bible illustration of Jericho. The city of Jericho was a fortress. It was impregnable. There was no way the children of Israel could have conquered it. But when the Israelites marched around 7 days and then on the 7th day marched around 7 times, blew the trumpets and shouted, and the walls fell down flat, when those walls were down, suddenly no one and no thing in that city was safe. And he that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. Angry person, no one and no thing under your authority in home or church or business is safe, including you yourself. Angry people are far more likely to have high blood pressure, heart attacks, strokes, and so on. I read that an angry person, when he displays anger, he gets little nicks on the inside of the vessels around his heart. And if he stays angry, continues to manifest anger, those little nicks will not heal themselves. A congregation of people were asked, how many of you ever yielded to some addiction after getting angry? And many hands went up. Why did those hands go up? Because once the anger is displayed, the protection is down. The walls are down. You are vulnerable. You are open. I talked to a mother who told me that she and her husband had lost 5 of their 6 children. She told me because of their anger. She volunteered it. And their oldest child, age 28, a daughter, had been granted custody by the courts of their youngest daughter, age 16, 2 years earlier because of the parents' wrath and anger. Now the oldest daughter, living in an immoral lifestyle, and the mother wants to go to the authorities and get the 16-year-old back for her protection. Of course, that sounds like a good thing to do. Talked for a little while, and then I said, I think I need to ask you, ma'am, how are you doing with your anger? She said, lots better. I said, ma'am, when was the last time you had any type of angry outburst at all? And she, well, last Saturday. And I replied, sadly, ma'am, I'm sorry, but it's too late. You're done. God gave you 2 years to change and you didn't. And the authorities are probably not going to give you your daughter back when those around you will testify that you still have a problem with anger. You know what anger did in that home? It took away all the defenses. The walls were wiped out to protect the family, and Satan destroyed all 6 children. And that is not an untypical story. It is too much a typical story in our day. Anger is a city without walls. Anger is, secondly, an unbearable load. Terry, would you come up here, please? Daniel, would you come up here and help me, please? And Ben, would you come up here and help me, please? Anger is an unbearable load. Listen to this verse. Proverbs 27:3 says, a stone is heavy and the sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. Ben, you look pretty capable. Here, I got something for you. Stand here and hold this for a while, would you please? There you go. All right. And there you go. That's a little easier for you. Stand right there. And Daniel, let's see, you stand right there. There you go. Stand right there. Now, guys, all you have to do is just stand there and hold it. A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. And the word heavier there means massive, abundant, burdensome, difficult, and oppressive. Can you imagine this young man carrying this rock around all day long? Can you imagine this fella carrying this rock around? I'm going to tell you, this baby's heavy. And that one's not light. He's not going to have too much trouble with that. But can you imagine? I actually wanted somebody a little smaller. Is there about a 4 or 5 year old here? Come up here, dress nicely. Any here? Anyway, I'd love to have somebody a little smaller. Daniel's pretty big here. But anyway, can you imagine carrying? Can you imagine a little guy, 3 or 4 years of age, carrying this rock around all day? All day. He can't ever put it down. He starts to put it down. His parents says, pick it back up. Pick it back up. Carry it. Carry it. Carry it. Carry it. Carry it. Carry it. And a child who lives with an angry parent is always carrying a rock. He never gets to set it down. He can't. When he's asleep, he's got the rock laying on his chest. When he is... There comes a smaller one. Yeah, come on up here. Caleb, right quick. Thanks, Daniel. I'll let you slip down. He's always carrying a rock. He can't lay it down. And not only that, come on up here. Caleb, it's my grandson. Yeah, I'll use him for a second. He's always carrying this rock. Now, he can't put it down. You got to hold it there. All right? How you doing anyway? Let's see. There have been times, listen to me. There have been times I wished I could have taken a picture of a child's face when his or her parent were angry. And then, how we doing over there, man?
How are you,
James? Starting to feel it. Starting to feel it. I say, okay. And then I'd love to come back later and let the parents study the picture and see the totally unbearable load they have put on their child. My girls, long ago, forgave their dad. But there are times when I still can remember the look of fear on my girls' faces because I used to justify my anger. I can still right now, standing here, see the look of fear on my girls' faces because they did something I didn't like and I said, "What is the matter with you?" Anger is one letter short of danger. And you know, younger men, generally speaking, more likely to get angry than older men. Not always. But younger men have drive, energy, vision, determination, generally speaking. There were 4 men who came to comfort Job after he lost all his flocks and herds, then lost his children, and then lost his health. And the youngest of the 4 was Elihu. And because he was youngest, he waited and spoke last. 3 times in 3 verses, the Bible says Elihu's wrath was kindled. Job 32:2-4. He was angry at Job, angry at Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. His anger was totally unjustified. He was wrong. When I shared that with someone, they gave me this observation. They said, you know, Brother Davis, have you noticed that anger continues till all the children leave home and then a fellow will tend to settle down somewhat? He said, Satan's goal in stirring the anger was to destroy the possibility of a godly seed. Anger is not only a city without walls, not only an unbearable load. How you doing?
Getting unbearable.
It's getting unbearable. What if he had to carry this all the time? I think we'll just let him stand there and hold it for just a little while longer. If it becomes, don't drop it. If it becomes too much, set it down, all right? How you doing there, Caleb? You're doing good. That's not too bad. And you know what? This is a picture. There are different levels of anger, but I don't care how big your anger is. After a while, it's going to get to be too much. Anger, thirdly, the Bible describes as a flood. Proverbs 27:4. wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous. And the Hebrew word means like a downpour or a flood. A powerful flood has the capability of washing away homes, churches, businesses, bridges. I had a nice bridge that one of the men of our church built for me across my little creek. Been there for several years. Huge flood a few weeks ago picked up this big bridge. A big, huge, heavy wooden bridge that we made. Nothing like what the highway department has, but a nice, sturdy wood. Picked that thing up and moved it 50 yards downstream. Now I'm trying to figure out how to get the thing out and what to do with it. Do you realize the power of water? Do you realize the power of a flood to wash away everything in its sight? God used the picture of a flood and water to destroy the whole world at one time. There is no such thing as a little anger. Anger is... This boy's going to pass out here. Let me help you set that down. Anger is a heavy... Man, I've forgotten how heavy that baby was. Thank you. Give that boy a big hand, all right? Anger is a heavy burden. Anger is a destructive flood. We're going to see how long these fellas last. All right? I remember talking to a fellow a number of years ago who was a member of our church at that time. He and his wife were having problems. I counseled with him several times. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever known in my life. He and his wife were having problems, but we were making some real headway. We had an appointment before church on a Wednesday night. And in that 30-minute appointment, in the middle of that appointment, that fella became angry. And in the midst of his anger, he started doing exactly what Jesus pictured right there. He was using different words, but he was calling his wife Rekha and fool. That's really what he was doing. His words were harsh and bitter and hateful. He cut her off. He murdered her in his heart. And in 5 minutes of anger, he undid 5 weeks of counseling. Anger is described forth as a poisonous snake. Proverbs 27:4, wrath is cruel. And one form of that Hebrew word cruel is used in Deuteronomy 32:33 to refer to the cruel venom of asp. When King Saul got angry at David and tried to pin him to the wall with a javelin, that anger was like a deadly snake striking at its prey. I talked to a mother with a 19-year-old son and two daughters, ages 15 and 12. The 15-year-old had run away from home 3 times in about as many months. When I asked the mother if she had a problem with anger, she said, "Well, yes. I'm facing a jail sentence right now for my anger. I kicked a policeman the last time we had a problem and needed police around here." Somebody said, "When a man gets mad, he goes mad." And the fifth picture of anger to me is the most picturesque of them all. The Bible picture, and I want you to turn back and see it in Job chapter 41. The Bible picture of an angry person is a fire-breathing dragon. Listen again to Proverbs 27:4. Wrath is cruel. And yet another form of that Hebrew word for cruel was used in Job 41:10 to refer to the fierceness of Leviathan. Are y'all doing all right? Is it starting to get a little heavy? It's starting to get a little heavy. Starting to get a little heavy. All right. Dr. Henry Murray said this: Leviathan was a real animal, presumably the largest and fiercest of all the aquatic dinosaurs, probably capable of breathing out fire. You say, fire-breathing dragons are just legendary creatures. No, you don't realize it. All those pictures from ancient history must have some basis in fact. Dinosaurs and men definitely lived together. And these pictures of fire-breathing dragons are probably rooted in real fact. And notice in Job chapter 41 verse 19 how God describes Leviathan. Out his mouth go burning lamps and sparks of fire leap out. Out of his nostrils goeth smoke as out of a seething pot or cauldron. His breath kindleth coals and a flame goeth out of his mouth. You say, that couldn't ever happen. Well, let me give you a little comparison, because we have a little creature like that is not extinct. is alive in our day, a little creature called the bombardier beetle. That little guy is armed with a very impressive defense system. Whenever threatened by an enemy, the bombardier beetle blasts irritating, odious gases 212 degrees Fahrenheit. Out from two little tailpipes right out of his little rear, right into the unfortunate face of the would-be aggressor who decides he's going to leave him alone. Now, don't you know, incidentally, evolution can't explain how that little beetle came into existence. It's impossible. Because he had to have all this all at once, and it could not have evolved. If it had evolved a little at a time, it would have blown him up while it was evolving. Had to be there all at once. But that little bombardier beetle is able to eject this power. Don't you know the same God who made that also made a fire-breathing dragon? Anyway, we are technically, biblically correct to compare an angry man to a fierce, fire-breathing dragon. You remember Herod in Matthew chapter 2? When the wise men who had talked to Herod earlier didn't return, he became exceeding wroth. What did he do? He sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and all the coast thereof from 2 years old and under. Herod's wrath was like that of a fire-breathing dragon killing all these babies. A pastor and his wife came to me. His children were rebellious. His wife was afraid. Afraid of him. She said, "Pastor Davis, if he can't control the situation, he loses control of himself." She said, "I had a pet dog. I had asked for an illustration." She said, "I can give you a lot of them." She said, "I'll give you the worst one. I had a pet dog. I loved her. The children loved her. She was the family pet. She got out in the yard one day and killed one of our chickens. My husband got angry. Then she did it again, and he got more angry and threatened to kill her. I told him, 'Honey, you can't do that. She's like a part of the family.' But she slipped out of the house, killed a chicken the third time, and she said, 'I couldn't stop him. I was crying. I was begging. The children were crying, but he walked out in a rage, took the shotgun, and blew away the family pet.' That man kept his chickens, but he lost his wife. And the last time I talked to the family, two of the three children wouldn't have anything to do with the father either. And the wife and daughter had orders of protection from the government against the father coming around. He was a fire-breathing dragon. And yet every time I talked to him, I was having to convince him he had a problem with anger. He could not see it. Just couldn't see it. How y'all doing? You ready to give it up? Give him a big hand, would you? Good job. You remember I told you about the fellow I was in another state? He said, "I come home tired. The kids haven't done their job. I tell them to do it. They sit there. When I raise my voice, get angry, they move. How do I get them to obey without getting angry?" And I said, "Sir, the children are responding that way because that's the way you've trained them to respond. The biggest thing you've got to do is retrain yourself, not them. If you retrain yourself, then you can retrain them." Here, let me picture it for you. You come home, you're tired, the chores are not done. Don't get angry. You just make keeping this getting worse. Softly tell them once to do the chores. If there's no response, calmly get up and take them by the hand and go do the chores with them. Do this consistently and kindly over and over every night until they learn. Another man spoke up and said, "Then where does spanking come in?" I said, "When a child has been trained and learned to do right and deliberately disobeys, then you calmly, firmly spank for disobedience. There'll be a sense of difficulty and suffering while that man is learning to obey God's ways himself and while he's trying to teach his children obedience, but it will be worth it." Incidentally, Proverbs 22:8 points out that if you get angry when you're spanking a child, your spanking did no good at all. It says the rod of his anger shall fail. Not only will an angry spanking not accomplish anything you want it to accomplish, it will actually do the opposite and make the child worse according to the Bible. in two other places in the Old Testament, Leviticus 26:44 and 1 Samuel 15:18, that Hebrew word, the rod of his anger shall fail, that Hebrew word fail, in two other places it is translated destroy and consume. An angry spanking damages, destroys, and consumes a child, and more angry spankings just make it that much worse. One of my favorite people of history was the preacher in the 1800s, died in 1901, T. DeWitt Talmage. In April of 1902, his son Frank eulogized his father and said this, "Among the many homes I visited as a pastor, I never entered one where the parent has so earnestly sought to inculcate gentleness of rule as my father did in my old home. My father never lifted a hand to strike a blow, yet he ruled his children with a rod stronger than one made out of iron. It was the rod of love. My sisters and myself had but one fear in reference to my father's life. We were afraid to do anything wrong for fear of seeing a wounded look pass over his kind face, which to us always reflected the light which shone from the divine face of Christ." Anger deceives. Anger is described as a city without walls so that anything can come in and destroy. It's described as an unbearable load. How are you doing with that, Caleb? You're doing good, all right? It's described as a flood that washes away everything in sight. It's described as a poisonous snake. It's described as a fire-breathing dragon. Let's give this boy a hand. I'll let him go down. You did good, Caleb. Thank you. That's a heavy little rock. Third, anger discovered. Where does it come from anyway? First of all, would you notice that anger comes from pride? Remember what I said earlier? Your anger isn't caused by what is happening outside of you. It's caused by what's happening inside of you. There will always be things that can make us angry if anger is inside of us. A teacher was helping one of her kindergarten students put on his boots. He asked for help, and she could see why. With her pulling and him pushing, the boots still didn't want to go on. And she had really worked up a sweat. She almost whimpered when the little boy said, "Teacher, they're on the wrong feet." She looked, sure enough, they were on the wrong feet. It wasn't any easier pulling the boots off than it was putting them on. She managed to keep her cool as together they worked to get the boots back on, this time on the right feet. And he then announced, "Teacher, these aren't my boots." She bit her tongue rather than get right in his face and scream, "Why didn't you say so?" like she wanted to. Once again, she struggled to help him pull those ill-fitting boots off. He then said, "They're my brother's boots. My mom made me wear them today." She didn't know whether to laugh or cry. She mustered up the grace to wrestle the boots on his feet again. And she said, "Now, where are your mittens?" He said, "I stuffed them in the toes of my boots." I'm telling you, there's always something to get angry about. If anger is inside of you, anger is not caused by what is outside. It's caused by what is inside. Where does anger come from? It comes from pride. It is pride that causes us to get angry at our wives or our husbands or our children. It is pride that causes us to talk down to them or anyone else. That's what Jesus said is generally the first manifestation of anger, is our voice and our words. Proverbs 21:24 refers to proud wrath. It is pride that makes us forget how much God has forgiven us, so that we feel we're better than those other sinners who have done us wrong. An unmerciful servant in Matthew chapter 18, begged his master's forgiveness for a multi-million dollar debt. And the master forgave him. Then he went out and grabbed a fellow servant by the throat and said, "Pay me that thou owest," a little tiny debt of 100 pence. His fellow servant fell down at his feet, besought him, saying, "Have patience with me, I will pay thee all." But he wouldn't be patient. He cast him into prison. Pride fails to remember the incredible forgiveness God has extended to you and me. And that's why the proud person is able to lash out in anger at anybody who offends him. There are people who, with an angry spirit, are just always talking down to their wives, always talking down to their children. Pride, and yet they don't see it. It's blinding. One of the first steps to conquer anger is to take responsibility personally for your anger by humbling yourself. Consider any offense against you personally as an opportunity to test your own gratefulness to the Lord for His tremendous love in forgiving you for so much. You know, the only one who really has a right to get angry is God Himself. Most of the references to anger in the Bible is God's anger. It's because He has a right also to take vengeance. For you and me to think we have a right to get angry is to try to put ourselves in God's place. And trying to manage anger instead of confessing it and forsaking it is like trying to help a bunch of little gods be nicer to each other. We're discovering where anger comes from. Secondly, it comes from the tensions created by unresolved guilt. Listen to this very carefully. Don't miss this. Get this. Anger comes from the tensions created because there's some sin and guilt that has never been properly dealt with. In Genesis 4, Cain became so angry with his brother Abel that he rose up against him and slew him. Why was Cain angry? Because he had disobeyed God earlier and never made it right. Abel had offered a blood sacrifice, which was a picture of the blood of Jesus, the only way our sins could be washed away. Cain offered the fruit of the ground. It was a picture of man's good works, which have never been acceptable before God as atonement for our sins. Cain was wrong, but he didn't want to humble himself and make it right. The tension from the guilt produced anger that resulted in the murder of his own brother. In Numbers 22, the prophet Balaam was offered money by King Balak to come and curse God's people. Balaam told Balak that he couldn't do it, but Balak offered him more money and honor, and Balaam decided he would go with him and try. On the way, the angel of the Lord blocked the path of Balaam and his donkey, and the donkey saw the angel and would not go any further. And three times Balaam got angry and beat his donkey until God opened the mouth of the donkey, who was able to rebuke Balaam and say to him, "When did I ever disobey you before? What are you hitting me for?" The donkey had more control at this point than Balaam did. The donkey was not as stubborn as Balaam was. Where was this anger coming from? This anger inside of him is causing him to beat this donkey that he's never had a problem with before. It was his own disobedience and covetousness inside of him that he refused to resolve. He disobeyed God. He coveted. He was continuing in disobedience and he refused to deal with it. I've seen employees steal from their employers, then get angry at the employer. I've seen husbands who were unfaithful to their wives, then got angry at their wives. Why? The tension of unconfessed sin and unresolved guilt from the past creates the anger. I've seen someone tell a lie on someone else and then get angry at the person they lied on. I've seen men get involved in pornography and then become angry at their family. The tension of the unconfessed sin, the unresolved guilt. Proverbs 26:28 says, "A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it." Somebody will tell a lie on you, then get angry at you. Probably the clearest illustration of this was David. David was a man after God's own heart. He was a righteous man and a righteous king. But in 2 Samuel chapter 11, David committed adultery. Bathsheba then had her husband Uriah killed to cover it up. And 2 Samuel chapter 12 tells how Nathan went to David and talked to him and said to him, told him a little story about a king up on a hillside who had lots of things and a little poor man down here in the valley who only had just a little bit, but they had one little lamb down there. The rich man had lots of lambs, and the rich man had company come, and instead of taking one of his sheep or lamb and feeding it to the man who'd come through, he went down in the valley and got the poor man's lamb and took that and killed the lamb that was like a pet to that family and fed it to his guest coming through. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man, and he said to Nathan the prophet, "As the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die, and he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing, because he had no pity." Now wait a minute. Nathan looked at him and said, "David, thou art the man. But why did David pronounce this judgment? David knew God's law. And the sentence, watch this, the sentence David pronounced that day went beyond God's law. Exodus 22 spelled out that four sheep were to be given for one sheep that was stolen. And also said that the thief should not be put to death. Why did David say that? There was all that tension inside of him. He's so angry from the unresolved guilt and the unconfessed sin, it made him vengeful and angry. And so, anger deceives you. Anger comes from pride. It comes from tension and unresolved guilt. There is a way to defeat anger. What should you do? Quickly, number one, quit justifying your anger. Number two, accept personal responsibility for your anger. If you're lost, get saved. And then remember that the source of anger is inside of you, not outside of you. Accept personal responsibility is to start fighting the anger itself instead of continually fighting the consequences of anger. You watch a person with anger, they're always fighting the consequences. The reason that is so is because Proverbs 19:19, a man of great wrath shall suffer punishment. If thou deliver him, yet thou must do it again. It's amazing to me how much time a person can spend fighting consequences of his anger. If he would take that time and energy fighting the anger itself, he'd live in victory. Number three, confess any pride by humbling yourself before God and others and asking for help. Number four, deal with any unresolved guilt from the past. Don't sweep it under the rug, bring it out and deal with it. Number five, forgive others who do you wrong and leave vengeance to God. Remember constantly how much Christ has forgiven you. Number six, seek to become meek and gentle like Jesus. You want to see how to behave around children? Watch how Jesus behaved around children. Jesus is not called the angry Christ. Only one time in all the Gospels did it even say He got angry. He's called the meek and lowly and gentle Christ. Meekness is strength under control, and anger is weakness in control. Number seven, think of the blessings that'll be yours when you cease to be an angry man or an angry woman. A Christian lady was really concerned about her lost husband, wanting him to find Christ. One day her pastor spoke to her husband about his soul. The minister was shocked when the man said, "Sir, I'm not particularly an irreligious man, but if Christianity is going to make me wrathy and angry like my wife, I really don't want any part of it." And the pastor went to the lady and told her exactly what her husband said. She didn't realize that her temper had been so out of control, and she became repentant. And together, she and the pastor knelt in prayer. She sobbed her heart out to God and begged God's forgiveness and made it a point to watch for the opportunity to demonstrate change. A few days later, the husband was out fishing. When he came into the house with his rod over his shoulder, he accidentally hit a costly lamp that went crashing to the floor. He stood with his hands over his ears waiting for the second crash of his wife's anger, and it never came. He looked up to see his wife smiling, and she said, "Don't worry about it, honey. Accidents happen in the best of families." He said, "You mean you're not going to get angry like you usually do?" She said, "No, honey. That's a thing of the past. I'm sorry I've been that way, but God's helping me to get control." And a few weeks later, that husband trusted Jesus as his Savior. Her testimony was strengthened by her anger being controlled by the Spirit of God. Would you bow with me, please?